Beruchim Abaim. Welcome to another edition of our Wednesday night class. Tonight we start another round of Perashat HaShavua as we begin the Torah again from Perashat Bereshit. It's actually humbling to try to understand any pasuk in the Torah. Any pasuk in the Torah has depth that's unlimited and probably incomprehensible to its fullest truth by human beings. That's on every pasuk in the Torah. When we talk about Perashat Bereshit, it'd probably take 100 years to interpret it. And I mean just the first pasuk, Bereshit bara Elohim et ha-shamayim et ha-aretz. So it's much more than you see is written there. No matter what you're going to say, you're just touching the surface, if at that. But we still have an obligation to delve into some points that might be applicable to daily life. Everything that you see in the world today was created in Perashat Bereshit. Everything. But I'd like to talk about one institution that I think is the key that was invented in this week's Perashah. The institution of marriage. You understand, Adam HaRishon was created, he was the only man in the world. God came along and said, Lo tov yot Adam lebado. God said, it's not tov, it's not good for man to be alone. Some might say, Lo tov, aval lo ra. It's not bad. But in any event, Borei Olam decided that man needs a wife. Again, the institution of marriage. So the class has great ramifications, both if you're married and if you're not married. If you're married, it might be a little depressing to see all the mistakes that we're making. The good side of it is that you might learn something that you might be able to enhance and make better things. If you're not married, you're lucky, because you won't make the mistakes. You learn the right way from scratch, and Bezat Hashem, when you find your Nasib, you'll have all the tricks already. So everybody benefits, including the speaker. The concept of marriage, I want you to know, is not a universally accepted concept. For example, the church, Lavdil, does not recognize marriage as a positive thing. To the church, their holiest men, so to speak, practice celibacy. They're celibates. They don't get married. To them, marriage is a compromise. To them, marriage is giving in to the Yetzer Hara. It's giving in to passion. It's giving in to their base desires. And therefore, only the special people that are willing to live a life of nizirut, of abstention, they become the leaders, they become the priests, etc. I don't know how they interpret this pasuk. I mean, my assumption is they believe in the Old Testament. Pasuk says, Lo tov, God says, not good to be alone. I don't know what they're saying. They're saying it's tov. I mean, who's right? Go look at what's going on in the church. It's not the time to speak about it. But as a result of their stringencies, more than the Torah demands, we see the perversions that are coming out with all the molestation and all the other scandals that the church is plagued by. That's tough, but marriage is not tough to them. It's interesting to point out, just as a side point, Somebody once asked, Hacham, it doesn't make sense. The Jews are such a small minority of the world population. But if you look at the who's who of the world, most of them are Jews. The greatest doctors are Jews. The greatest lawyers are Jews. The greatest businessmen are Jews. Everywhere you go, Jews. Doesn't make sense. You know, you look at our success, you think we're like the Chinese. You think there are billions of us. How could such a small nation have such smart people? It's a good question. The real answer is because God blessed our people. We're chosen, therefore we have special beracha. That's the real answer. But I offered him another answer, out of the box. The answer could be is because look what we do to our smart people, and look what the goyim do to their smart people. The goy takes his smartest guy, who has smart genes, and he becomes a celibate. So the smart gene is now cut. It's not produced. It's not perpetuated. What do we do in our religion? You take the smartest guy, the Rosh Yeshiva. He has smart genes. Who does he marry? The Rosh Yeshiva's daughter, the other one. She also has smart genes. They have 20 kids. All the smart genes go into children. They're all smart. They produce smart people. They're killing off their smart people. The smartest guy is the Pope. Cholestai is finished. They ended it. Ended it by him. It doesn't continue. So you want to know why there's so many smart Jews? Because they're not involved in continuing it. It's to our benefit. Of course, our Torah diametrically opposed to that. We believe that marriage is a positive thing. The holiest man in our religion is the Kohen Gadol. The holiest place is the Kodesh Kodashim, the Holy of Holies. The holiest day is Yom Kippur. Do you know the Kohen Gadol was not allowed to enter the Kodesh Kodashim unless he was married? Look at that. To us, you have to be married. To us, it's a hasaron. You're missing. You can't be perfect. The man cannot reach the shelemut, the perfection, unless he has a wife. As the Pasuk writes, V'chiper ba'ado u'ba'ad beto. Gemara says, beto zo ishto. Again, a diametrically opposed view. The question is, tonight, why is it so important to get married? I pose this question to the men. Well, the knee-jerk response, which is not wrong, what do you mean, Rabbi? It's a mitzvah to get married. Torah says, peru urvu. You have to have children. Didn't you just say, perpetuate the smart genes and all that stuff? You gotta get married, you gotta have children, peru urvu. You're not wrong. But I'm looking tonight for something deeper. Somebody might tell me, Rabbi, what do you mean? It's about errands. Who's going to pick up the cleaners? There comes a point in a person's life where he doesn't want to go pick up the cleaners anymore. He did it for 25 years already, so he deserves now some domestic help. So he has in-house help. He'll cook him dinner, make the beds. So it's convenient. It makes sense. It's practical. You're laughing, but there's people out there that'll give that answer with a straight face. And you tell them, well, you're out of your mind. So what do you mean? What is marriage about? Tonight, however, we offer probably the essence of why it's important to get married. Torah tells us in this parasha that man was created, and woman also, b'tzelem Elokim. Undoubtedly the hardest concept in the parasha. Man was created in the image of God. Go try to understand that. What does it mean, image of God? Does it mean we look like God? God doesn't have an image, that we can be created in His image. You're not allowed to believe that God has an image. En lo guf, en lo demut haguf. So all the Hakamim grappled to try to explain Tzelem Elokim. But I'll explain you the Zohar tonight, how it explains Tzelem Elokim. The Zohar says man was created from dirt. All of you, don't get offended. You're all dirt. I'm also dirt. That's the components of man. Adam comes from the word Adama. Adama is dirt. The earth. And man was shaped in a form with a head, with the arms, the whole body. But he had no movement. He was inanimate. And then God blew into him Nishmat Hayim. Vayipach be'apav. Very important. God blew into every person a soul. So the Zohar writes on this, Man de nafach, midile nafach. When somebody blows something into something, he's blowing himself into that. I make it easy for you, a balloon. If I blow my air into a balloon, that means part of me is now in that balloon. Let me explain it to you more clear. If in that air there was, God forbid, a certain bacteria, that bacteria is going to be in the balloon now. Part of me is in the balloon. Which means when God blows into every human being, He's blowing of Himself. So every human being has a piece of God in him. So whatever God is, we are. This you have to go home and let it simmer, this thought. This is a deep thought. If God blew of Himself, so whatever He is, we are. For example, God cannot be seen. So too the neshama cannot be seen. God is a creator. Man is a creator. Look what we're creating. Every single day, a new cell phone, a new fax machine, a new video camera. Man is creating things leaps and bounds. God has free choice to do whatever He wants. Man has free choice to do whatever he wants. Bihira. So we possess Helek Elokam Mima'al in us. Oh, so now listen to the point. If that's true, God's quality, and maybe one of the most beneficial qualities that we gain from is, God is a giver. God only gives. And He gives all day, every moment. When you're sleeping, He's giving. Your arteries are working, the blood is flowing, the heart is beating, the mind still works, the earth is still stable. There's oxygen in the air. The moon is exactly where it's supposed to be, for it is, if it is off an inch, the world would be flooded. The sun rises, the sun sets. God is just giving food. He's feeding billions of people every day. All the animal kingdom, God's feeding them. There's no giver like God. You spend a lifetime just to try to fathom, what does it mean God's a noten? So if God's a giver, that means we have to be givers. It's in us. Man de nafach, medile nafach. We have a piece of that in us. So what does God do? God tells Adam, if you have a piece of me in you, you have to emulate. So God says you have to get married. You have to marry a wife. Why? In order to give. This is a hadush, it's a bombshell. You ask somebody on the street, what do you get married for? The answer, to give, to be like God. Say, Rabbi, what do I have to get married for? I'll open up an orphanage. I'll open up a Hesed foundation. I'll give charity. Nah. That's on your own terms. That you can do, you don't have to do, when you're in the mood, when you want to. God says, I give unconditionally. So therefore, I want to put you in a position where you have to give. So therefore, you get married to a wife, of course, to bring children. I'm not discounting that. But in its essence, to emulate God, and how does it manifest itself? By giving of yourself to your wife. The ladies must be thrilled when they hear this concept. It's unbelievable. Keep on talking, Rabbi. What else is it about? The lady is the recipient. Now there's a little enigma here, because usually it's embarrassing to be a recipient. The Zohar also talks about a concept called Nehama de Kisupa, bread of shame. Nobody wants handouts. People like to be independent. Nobody wants to be dependent on others. But there's an exception. A lady does not mind to receive from the husband. It's not shameful. It's not perceived as something that's derogatory. On the contrary, it's perceived by a lady, a most important message, that she's loved, that she's valued, and that she's recognized. Again, the lady benefits greatly by being on the receiving end of man's generosity. And then her potential comes out. The potential of a lady, when she's receiving the proper generosity and givingness and etc., the lady's potential is limitless. Just to give you an example. What does it mean that a lady can wake up in the middle of the night 3 or 4 times to nurse a baby? A man is not misugal to do such a thing. He's not. It's not in him to do such a thing. Even the concept is foreign. What does it mean to wake up in the middle of the night? Would we be able to function as men the next day? We stay up one night, Hoshanah Rabbah, we're jet lagged for the next week. And a lady could do that without skipping a beat. To wake up, feed a baby, wake up the next morning, 25 chores in the house. What does it mean to take care of children? Is a man, can a man fathom such a job? Let a man stay home with his children for an hour. Go out of his mind. He can't imagine what's going on over here. It's like a zoo. How do you control them? How do you deal with this over here? You lose your wit. But a lady has a certain type of, it's a different creature. A certain type of patience, a certain type of easiness, a certain type that's able to deal with the children. She doesn't run away, which is something the man would definitely do. So the potential of a lady, which is, again, an amazing creature, is brought out when she's recognized properly by the husband. Whether it's through giving, as we said, through recognition, through compliments, which we'll talk about shortly. So everybody benefits. The man is emulating God, the lady's responding properly by doing what she's supposed to do, and she's happy and the love is returned. And everybody lives happily ever after. So if you ask me what our definition of the word love is, there's another major, major league discussion. Love in our dictionary means to give. The more you give, the more you will love. Rabbi Dessler said it. He said, who do you love the most in this world? Your father, your mother, your rabbi. Who do you love the most out of anybody in this world? Be honest. You love yourself, exactly. Don't kid yourself. He said, me too. And you're allowed to love yourself, by the way. The Torah says, "Ve'ahavta le'ra'acha kamocha." The Torah says you have to love your neighbor like you love yourself. So the premise is you have to love yourself. You can't love your neighbor if you don't love yourself. So you're allowed to love yourself. So Rabbi Dessler says, if everybody's consumed with self-love, how do you get to love anybody else? He says again, by giving. But he explains it. He says, when you give, you're giving part of yourself to that person, and you start becoming invested in that person, and you start to see yourself in that person, because you gave to that person. So you still love yourself, but now you see yourself in that person. You hear the psychology, how it works? He says, brilliant. I'll explain it to you a little easier. A fellow in the summer planted tomatoes, and he worked on the tomato patch the whole summer. Came home from work, he planted, he watered, he looked at it, he's analyzing it, he's enjoying it. And finally, at the end of the summer, he's a big, red, fat tomato. And he goes out, Yom Simchat Libon, and he plucks the tomato, he's walking in the house, he's proud as could be. A friend sees him and says, Jack, let me see that tomato. He picks, takes the tomato, he throws it, he hurls it against the side of the house, he smashes the tomato. How devastated is this guy now? He takes him, he grabs him by the shirt, what did you do, my tomato, I planted. He says, okay, can't take a joke, relax, it's a tomato. I'll go to the store, I'll buy you a basket of tomatoes. What are you going crazy for? He says, no, this is a special tomato over here. I invested a whole summer into it. I planted it. You can buy me a tomato from the supermarket. It's not the same thing. What is a pshat? Because he sees himself in the tomato. So when you threw that tomato against the side of the house, like you picked the guy up and you threw him against the side of the house. It's a frontal attack against the guy himself, because he is the tomato. You don't like the tomato example? I'll give you an example we can relate to. It's the psychology of a sports fan. You ever understand the psychology of a sports fan? Why do you love the Yankees? Could you explain it to me? They give you anything? If they win, you make money? Do they give you kavod? You come to the stadium, do they stand up for you? Do they announce your name? What's the logic? Why you should be so passionate about people winning or losing? It shouldn't affect you. Why are you happy when they win? Why are you sad when they lose? That doesn't affect you. The explanation is because since you were young, you listened to every game. You bought the hat, you have the scorecard, you went to games, you talked about it, clippings. So now, you see yourself as the team. So when they win, you won. Because you're the team. Because you gave so much, that's you. When they lost, you're crying. They're not crying. Okay, well, you're crying. What are you crying? They didn't bother them as much. Because if they lost, you lost, because you see yourself in the team. Apply that to anything in life. A baby is born. Who loves the baby on the day the baby is born? Who loves the baby more, the mother or the father? The mother, without a doubt. Because the mother has already invested 9 months. Morning sickness, etc., etc. So there's an investment there. So the father, when the baby comes out, says, oh, I love you. What do you love? What do you love? What do you love? You don't even know the kid. You know the mailman more than you know the kid. What are you going to love? Loving comes after you send the kid to school and you give him allowance. And there'll become a lot of opportunities to love the child. But love can only come after you give. That's a fact. Learned is good. The only problem is, what I'm saying, is society doesn't have this definition. and we're influenced by our society. There's a runaway rate of failed marriages in society. It's because their definition of marriage and love is misconstrued. And unfortunately, we're living in this society, it's going to trickle down to us. You know, the Hatam Sofer, when he used to consult people, after he'd consult somebody with a problem, he'd open up a book of Musar and learn. So they tell him, Rabbi, what are you opening up Musar for? He said, because this fellow just came into my office and he talked about his trait of anger, how he can't control his anger. And just by hearing him talk about his lack of self-control, it affects me. I become more prone to anger just by sitting and talking to the guy for an hour. So to neutralize it, I have to sit and read Musar about anger for an hour or two just to, you know, to get back to the level. So you're living in a world that they're giving you definitions and you're seeing it on the screen and you're seeing it on television, one shot. And even though in your mind you say, okay, maybe we don't go with this, but it's gonna trickle down to your lives. Hollywood defines love as self-gratification. Not giving, but what you can get. A lady on the screen is an object. And therefore the man is able to gratify himself, so he says, I love you. He loves himself. It's a hedonistic interpretation. Ahava to them equals ta'ava, equals lust. So that's why a man can see a girl on the first encounter and say, I love you. Because to them, love is lust. It can be lust immediately. For us, love doesn't come until later on. For us, how could you love somebody when you just met them? You know, love, I didn't give you yet, I didn't invest in you, I don't know. So they have a very distorted interpretation. It's like the story of the Kutzker Rebbe. The Kutzker Rebbe once saw one of his students eating fish. So he said, my dear student, why are you eating fish? He says, because I love fish. He says, if you love fish, why don't you go to an aquarium? What are you eating them for? You hate fish. Hey, you love yourself. So when a person by the secular world tells a lady, I love you. He loves you. Loves? What does he love? He loves himself. And he can gratify himself through a lady, so therefore he loves the lady. But this love is fleeting. The proof of the pudding is those people in Hollywood that define love as such have a divorce rate of over 70%. So what happened? But you're telling us this is what it is. But you see, it's not working. It's doomed to fail from the get-go. Of course, we're not discounting the physical attraction. But the physical attraction is only the beginning, which leads to a much deeper sense of ahava. And the longer one is working on this, and the longer one is married, the ahava doesn't dissipate. By the goyim, it dissipates. You're married for 10 years already, the people are bored already. Haja already. Next subject. What's the, like the car, you know, the next model. What's the next car? We did this already. Because they have a different understanding. So it becomes stale, it becomes boredom, it becomes monotonous. By us, on the contrary. The longer one is able to stick with it and work on it, the love only becomes more because you're giving more. It's a formula. I'm not saying anything brilliant. It's out of bits. 1 + 1. So one of the men is going to ask and say, but Rabbi, It sounds nice, but it doesn't work. And I'll prove you it doesn't work, what you say. So I give my wife a lot of money every week. Go buy groceries, do things, allowance. We live in a house. She has a car. I give. And I don't see the reaction. I don't see... you're telling me the potential. It's going to be shalom. So I'm giving everything. All I do is give. The explanation, the answer to that question is... When I said give, I don't mean things that you have to give. A man signed the ketubah when he got married that he's going to support his wife. If he doesn't support his wife can take it to Beit Din. This is something you have to do. It's not something you're not gracious. giving a lay, here's money, go buy all the food you want. You're doing me a chesed. You have to do it. You have a house. What, you want to live in the street, in the sewer, with the house? You have to have a house. You have a car? We have a car. We live in cars. We drive cars. What are you talking about? What we're talking about giving is the over and above. It means on the Friday afternoon when you come home with the $10 bouquet of flowers. That's not written in the ketubah. No one asked for that. That's a sign where you're investing. And the reaction, according to what we're saying, of the lady, the $1,000 allowance will not do that. The $10 flowers will do that. In fact, the ladies are smiling. Must be right. Don't look, trust me. A man comes home with a quart of milk. This will bring lahava. But you remember, you just said that. What do you mean? Milk, you need milk. Yeah. But usually we wait until we're asked, until we're tormented, until we're harassed, until we can't take it anymore. Okay, here's the milk bar. Take the milk. Dachilak, leave us alone. But hey, you came along before you were asked, and you were, you thought you went. That milk is a dollar. Understand? It's the extra. It's giving the allowance to your wife before she asks. We understand you have to give. But how? Hey, take it. The respect. So this is how you... It's what you give. It's the above and beyond the call of duty. It's in the middle of the day when you pick up a phone. Now, you don't have to do that. According to the ketubah, it doesn't say anything about phone calls. But it shows a recognition. There's a story told of a fellow on his wife's birthday. He bought her a gift. It's not the most romantic gift. He bought her a plot. Plot in the cemetery. Of course, he's shocked by such a thing. So the next year came around, and he didn't get her anything for her birthday. So she says, "What do you mean? How come you didn't get me anything for my birthday this year?" He says, "You didn't use last year's gift." So you see over here, gifts, presents, not obligated, but that's what brings the ahava. That's what brings the love. Husband has to know that. And if you're playing it right, the reaction of the lady is an automatic. It's an automatic. That's got to be played the right way. It's like watering the orange tree. It's going to grow, finished. So you come along and say, Hakam, but the tree's not growing. It's the tree's fault. Whatever the tree. It can't be the tree's fault. The tree don't know. The tree's dead. It reacts. You didn't water it, you didn't plant it. Do the right thing, it's going to work. That's a fact. That's the way it works in marriage. The Torah then tells us another key. Of course, we can't solve all the problems in marriage in one lesson, but the Torah tells us a key. God says, "Eser lo ezer kenegdo." God says, I'm going to make man a helpmate, ezer, kenegdo, against him. Now that's a contradiction in terminology. Is a wife an ezer, or is she a kenegdo? Is she a helpmate, or is she an adversary? How could the Torah put both those words together? It doesn't make sense. You're either an ezer or you're a kenegdo. You can't be both. So Rashi has an interpretation. Rashi says it's talking about two different ladies. Zaka ezer. If the man is lucky, so he'll have a helpmate. Lo zaka. If he's unfortunate, kenegdo. She'll be an adversary. But we might say another explanation. The Torah's coming along and saying that your wife, your ezer, is kenegdo, is opposite of you. Which means a lady is not a man, and a man is not a lady. It's not an ezer that's your havero. It's not likes. Men and ladies, it's not two likes. It's not apples and apples. It's an ezer, but it's kenegdo. She's different. You got to know that. If you know that, it'll save you a lot of problems. What do I mean it's different? Take an example. I'm just giving you an example. In the dictionary of a lady, the word clean is not the same definition as a man. You see, I'll look at this table, I think it's clean. I'll sign my name to a paper that will say it's clean. A lady will come and look at the table and say it's filthy. And now she'll come and scrub and do it. What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you? It's clean. We got to know. Our definition of clean is not your definition. I walk into the hotel room sometimes with my wife and say, wow, what a beauty room. My wife's filthy. What's filthy? What are you filthy? There's dust. What do you see dust? So you know that. It's just an example. Now, you can't change that. You can't get upset at somebody for having blue eyes. It's in the genome. It's in the DNA. This is the way we are. So you fight it, but you're fighting something that's irreversible. You're fighting something that's a nature. But once you know that that's the nature, okay, that's what it is. I'll give you another example. The concept of time. Concept of time by a lady is different than the concept of time by a man. Man will come along and tell his wife, we're leaving to the wedding, what time do you want to leave? She'll say, we'll leave at 7:30. Not 7:30, it's fair. 9 out of 10 times, we'll come 7:30. She's not ready. All right, so the husband says, okay, when I said 7:30, it doesn't mean 7:30. It's not a train. So you wait 5 minutes. You're generous. You wait 10 minutes, 7:40. She's still not ready. That husband starts to flip out. What kind of business is it? We said 7:30, you're never ready. You're always late. But if he understands that the concept of time of a lady, it doesn't work like that. When she says 7:30, in her mind, it could mean 7:30 to 9 o'clock. It's a different number. And it's a good thing it's like that, because that's the same lady that has no concept of time when she wakes up at 3 o'clock in the morning to feed the baby. She also has no concept, so it's good. It works to your benefit more times than not. In the middle of the night, she'll be up. It doesn't matter. But no, so now the guy who doesn't know that, you'll have a machloket every time you have a bar mitzvah, every time you have a wedding, every time you have a party, it's machloket. The one that knows it, don't get nervous already. It doesn't matter what time she says. You try to make an area, they take out a gemara, you can finish shas. But you won't get nervous. See, this is a trick. The problem is, you're thinking that just like you're prompt, so everybody's prompt. But it's not so. When it comes to just examples, the rest you could go on yourself and figure out. When it comes to the concept of money, Men and ladies are very different again. It's nothing. It's in the genes, so you can't even change this if you want. Most men, they have their money in a rubber band or in a wallet. It's in one place. You know exactly how much money you have in your pocket at any given time. Go to your wife's pocketbook and you see bedlam. There's $20 bills all over the place, in, out, on the table, on the counter. You walk in, what's going on over here? Where's all the money? Where's the money all over the place? What are they doing? Put it in a... Because your concept of money is not a lady's concept of money. It's a different concept. It's not as serious as a man takes it. Why? That's the way Borei Olam put it. But where the rice is, no, the rice is going to be the way the rice is. The sugar is going to be where the sugar is. That'll never be in the wrong place. Because that's a priority. But the money, it's a scattered. You can't get angry. Of course, if she's throwing the money, feeding the birds with the money, of course, you have to deal with that. Then you need the help. But it's not uncommon when you're making bedikat hametz and you're checking in your wife's raincoat and you find a $20 bill. That'll never happen to a man. You forgot $20 in a prayer. You have to forget $20. You'll never forget. You know exactly where the money is. Could you take off a coat and leave money in it for a year and come back a year later? $20? But it later happen every year now. What does that mean? Is it right or wrong? It's not right or wrong. Blue eyes, brown eyes. Who's right? Who's right? Not right. That's the way it is. You're both right. But if you understand it, so you don't get nervous. So you learn to live with it. A lady needs recognition. The Rambam writes. I'll quote you on Rambam for a second. The Rambam writes, V'chen sivu chachamim. The rabbis commanded us, Sheyeh adam mechabed et ishto, yoter megufo. Man must respect his wife more than he respects himself. The respect manifests itself with compliments, with a good word, with communication, with conversation. I'll give you an example. It's an example that most people make a mistake on. And it happens a lot. A lady will call her husband in the middle of the work day. It's busy. Honey, I'm in the store. Should I buy the tall glass or the short glass? What does the husband say? He says, buy any, whichever one you want to buy, buy them both, whatever you like. He hangs up the phone. Now, he hangs up the phone thinking, what a husband I am. What husband would be so generous and tell his wife, buy them both, buy whatever one you want. He's unbelievable. What a guy. And she hangs up the phone upset. Because that wasn't her question. You didn't understand the question. When the lady called up and said, should I buy the tall glass or the short glass? I'll prove it to you that wasn't her question. Because you're going to answer the short glass and you're going to come home and she bought the tall glass anyway. So she wasn't asking you that question. And when you said buy whatever you want, what you really were saying is you're a pest. Leave me alone. Do whatever you want. Get out of here. That's what you're really telling her. Leave me alone. Get out. Do whatever you want. You're just for this. You're bothering me in the middle of Wolf's dog glass, short glass. What are you doing? Get out of here. Go buy them all. Don't buy. Buy. The explanation is like this. What's happening here? The lady needs recognition. You remember sometimes when you wanted to get close to your rabbi when you were young, so you needed to make up a question just in order to ask him something, that was like the in. Now when she asked him the question, it was irrelevant what the question was, because that wasn't your purpose to ask him the question. But now you have his attention, now already you can create a certain communication and a relationship. So you went to the rabbi, how do you explain this pasuk? You weren't even listening to his answer, because that wasn't your really purpose.
But now you have him on the line. Oh, Rabbi, I have this, that, other thing, da, da, da. So you gained his respect a little. It was the in. That's exactly what the lady is doing. The tall glass, the short, you missed the point. So when you hang up on her, you say, I have no time. What you're saying, I'm not. She's asking me, show me some recognition, show me some concern, show me some thought. So you hang up. You're coming home thinking it is your Sadiq. She's upset. Why are you upset? I told you to buy anything. It's the same thing. What should I make for dinner? Whatever you want. It's not the right answer. Because that's not really the question. Because she's going to make whatever she wants anyway. So that's not the question. Question is, talk to me for 5 minutes. But that was the in. The in was, well, okay, now I'm in. I'm in the door, I talk for 2 minutes. So give it that, talk a little. Show, oh, yeah, you're concerned about, you're thinking about it. Whatever it is, I care about that, whatever it is. But that's a trick, you have to know that. A man is not a lady. It's Ezer Kenigdo. A lady has to know that. A man likes to make decisions. Fact, it's not wrong. It's good for the world that man likes to have control. David HaMelech, Shlomo HaMelech. Look at all the good that these men did with the control that they had. Look at all good that the prominent men, Rashi Yeshivot, Hakamim, with the control and the power to decide and make decisions. Look what they did to the world, Baruch Hashem. But that's a man's thing. So a lady has to know that. When a lady starts to make decisions in the house, so she's encroaching on the man's domain. That's a machlok, it's going to happen. So a lady, of course, things are discussed, but the man should be the one that makes the call. And even if the lady's going to make the call, she should do it in a way where the husband thinks that he made the call. She brings it around, makes the decision, and then gives the credit to the husband. He thought of it. That's his domain. A lady must know, and again, we're not doing this subject justice at all in the short amount of time that we have. But like I said in the beginning, nothing can really be taken to its full degree in a lifetime, even on these Torah concepts. The most crucial part of the day in married life is when the husband rings the bell when he comes home from work. It's a critical moment, and depending on the way the wife answers the door, that can set the pace for the rest of the evening. Let me tell you the attitude of a man when he comes home. The Rambam writes that in the lady's eyes, her husband should be kemo sar o melech. A lady must look at her husband as a king or a prince. Mahalechet b'ta'avat libo, the things that he likes. She prepares, b'chol ma she yisna, and whatever he hates, she distances. Ze derech benot Yisrael, hakedoshim v'atehorim. U'bederachim elu yiyeh yeshuvan na'eh u'meshubach. If she follows this, things will be good. That's what we said, the man wants to think he's a king. So the lady has to treat him like a king. So when a king comes home, he's coming home to his castle. It's an island of tranquility. He's in the business. He has problems. He wants to go to relax. Finish. I'm coming home. I want to relax. No problems. But when a lady bombards her husband at the door, he didn't get his foot in the door. Mahadillo with problems. This thing, the kids, the pain. He called. She called. So already you didn't let him unwind. You're violating the respect of the castle. Problems are never supposed to be discussed immediately. You have to wait. Honey, sit down, drink, dinner. Only after he has certain peace of mind. Of course, the subjects have to be discussed. We're not talking about neglecting issues. but in its time. But the lady, if she doesn't know this trick, she can't understand. How come it comes home, he's all upset? Because how did you answer the door? How did you... What happened in those critical moments? Already he attacked him. He was assaulted at the door. What do you expect is going to happen? It's amazing. You can be married for 50 years and you didn't know these things. How come I didn't know these things? These are very important items over here. So how come I wasn't taught this when I was dating? They didn't teach us this. Would have saved me a lot of what Jah does. We'll just say one more point. So that's the Ezer Kenegdo. It's a Kenegdo. It's not the same species. The last dilemma in marriage is the fights. The Mahloket. When all this is said, and we're going to follow it, and we're going to do it, and we're going to give, and receive, and potential, and everything's going to be fine, it's inevitable there's going to be machloket. That's a fact. It's been said that the Torah writes that the first year of marriage, man does not have to go to war. He's exempt from the war. One said because he's fighting a war already. How many wars can he fight at the same time? They exempt him. So marriage is not free. The best marriages are not free from contention and fighting and arguments and such. I think it's important to keep in mind the minhag that we have at every chuppah. Our custom is that the Hatan breaks a glass right at the end of the ceremony. Smashes his foot on a piece of glass. Why? Now, the most common interpretation is to remember the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. We're going out to celebrate, but we're trying to tell God, we're going to temper our enjoyment because we do remember that it can never be the same because we don't have the temple. I had a different theory. I once said at a wedding, it's the last time the man is going to put down his foot. So it's a symbolism. Yeah, one more time for the road. Put your foot down, because after this it's all over. But in all seriousness, the Hachamim bring a different reason. Hachamim say, the reason why we break the glass is to commemorate the breaking of the two tablets by Moshe. Now, we don't doubt that that was something of major consequence, and it was a great event in Jewish history, the breaking of the tablets, but for what purpose to commemorate that? Why now? To commemorate the breaking of the Luchot, what's the connection between that and marriage? So I saw a fascinating interpretation. In last week's parasha, the last three words of the Torah are le'enei kol Yisrael. The Torah ends up by telling us, remember what Moshe Rabbeinu did in front of all the eyes of Israel. Rashi explains, what was that? He broke the Luchot. That's the apex of Moshe Rabbeinu's career. The Torah ends up, remember all that he did, and don't forget what he did in front of everybody. He broke the Luchot. Why is that such a great thing? Why does the Torah end off with that accomplishment? Because Rabotai, the breaking of the Luchot, tells us what type of superhuman being Moshe Rabbeinu really was. Think yourselves. You're about to start a project. You sit down with some people and you have a meeting. And you're discussing the pros and cons. Should we do it? Shouldn't we do it? In the first meeting, everybody's very objective. Everybody has a clarity of thought. The positives and the negatives. But now the project is underway for 6 months.
Are you still as objective as you was before you started? Of course not. You're a year into the project. How difficult it is to say, a year into the project, we're making a mistake, let's stop. We're already entrenched. Now we're ready, even if you wanted to back out, you're so prejudiced and blinded by the fact that you invested so much, you can't say no. It's like an admission of that you were wrong. So the deeper you get involved in anything in life, the harder it is to see clarity, to be intellectually honest. Moshe was not like that. Moshe went up to Shamayim for 40 days and 40 nights. He didn't eat. He didn't drink. He didn't sleep. The Malachim wanted to kill him. Finally, he comes down with two luchot. What an investment. The time, the self-sacrifice. And what does he see? He sees the Egel. You know what we would have done? The Egel is very bad, but the luchot are too important to me. I put so much effort into it. Let's put the luchot on Guinea's house, put them on the side, put them in a box. Let's deal with the Egel, and then, you know, you can't break the luchot. This is my whole career is the luchot. Moshe Rabbeinu had such an honesty and such a clarity that when he saw the Egel, he said, this is wrong, these luchot. They don't belong now. It's a mistake to give these luchot, and he smashed them. And that's the greatest compliment of our leader. Look at the honesty. Look at the unprejudiced view. Look at the unjaundiced eye of Moshe that he's able to admit it's wrong. There's no pride, there's no ego. But look what I did. Look, nothing. I'm wrong. It doesn't wrong. Break them. Le'enei kol Yisrael. And that's what we're telling the bride and the groom at every wedding. Right before they're ready to march out, we break the glass to commemorate the luchot, to remind them there's going to be fights in your marriage. And once you start finding each side is going to be entrenched in his view, in his shita, and it's going to be very difficult to be clear and maybe even to admit mistake or to say, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Because it's ego now. What do you mean? So even if you're wrong, you don't see you're wrong because you're ready. I'm screaming for an hour. Now what, I'm going to backtrack? I look like a fool. So you just have to keep your position. So the husband keeps his position and the wife keeps his position and the machloket festers and the machloket becomes exaggerated, becomes promoted. So the Torah is telling you, the Minhag's telling us at the wedding, we shatter the glass to remember the honesty of Moshe. They're telling the bridegroom, when you start to have a machloket, stop in your tracks and think, am I wrong? And if you are, be honest. Don't hold on to it. Say, I'm sorry. What a lesson. What a concept to teach a young couple. A trick. Learn from Moshe Rabbeinu. Don't hold on to the argument. Reanalyze it. Maybe you're making a mistake. And admit it. That's the greatness. The breaking of luchot is as great. Not the making of the luchot. The breaking of them. The objectivity that he maintained under all circumstances. Be objective in your marriage. And Be'ezrat Hashem, if we can start to implement some of these ideas, I'm talking to myself also, we begin to understand what God meant, Lo tov yot adam levado. We start to reap all the benefits that God says marriage has to offer. We begin to emulate God. We begin to use that spirit, the spirit of man de nafach, medide nafach, the spirit that God blown into us like the balloon. And we're able to bring out our true potential and the potential of our wives. And the rewards are great. Be'ezrat Hashem, we should all build batim ne'emanim b'Yisrael, those of us that are married, this should become enhanced. And those of us that are not, don't get scared. This should be an impetus that you should find your nasib in the right time, and you should use these pieces of advice and take them further. Let this be the springboard to analyze the subject in depth. B'zat Hashem, you also will build batim ne'emanim b'Yisrael. Baruch Adonai le'olam, amen v'amen. Rabbi Hananya ben Hakashia omer, Sakados barakuz zakot yitzel lefichah, kerbal nem tov shneemar, v'yachafes eman tzedko, yichdir Torah v'yadir. Ladies, we have a class tomorrow afternoon at 1:15, downstairs in the Midrash. Every Thursday we have a class 1:15 on Parashat HaShavua. Different than this class.